When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hi, everybody. Welcome to Who Cares About the Rock Hall, a podcast about the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. I am your host, Joe Quazala. With me, as always, is Kristen Studdard.
That is me.
It is a show where I talk about my one true obsession, the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. I am sorry. And Kristen, your relationship with the Hall, where does it stand at this point?
Boy, ever evolving. We've gone from hate. We've never gotten to love, but we've gotten to tolerance and certainly, I certainly know much more than I would ever have liked. It's definitely taking up valuable space in my brain and, dare I say it, in my heart.
Wow.
Yeah, I know.
That's a statement.
I know.
That's some real shit, and I love it.
On the real.
Okay. Our guest today, very happy to have her, very funny comedian and writer, it's Emily Heller.
Hi, guys. That's her.
Thanks great. For joining us.
Oh, great to be here.
Emily, this is a show about a weird institution. We know it. We come to
marriage.
This. Yeah, the holy sacrament of matrimony. And you'll be getting married to both of us.
Yes.
Surprise.
All right, finally.
Right, yeah. But only if a shadowy cabal of men in a conference room in New York City over a giant hoagie decide that we should get married.
Kristen okay. is, of course, referring to more or less the way that people are nominated for the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame.
Okay,
it's a
yes.
shadowy cabal of men, primarily, in a big conference room in the Rolling Stone offices in New York City. And they meet... They eat, and they vote.
Yeah. When you say men primarily, is that, are there any women?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
There
just named
women.
One in the last episode, and I didn't yeah. know, I mean, because we've met two members of the nominating committee. They've been on our podcast.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, former members.
How contentious did those episodes get?
They were great because they're former members.
Okay, yeah. yeah.
So they could kick back and say
be
how
like,
they
that's
feel.
The new guys. Yeah. I mean, yeah, I wanted what you want.
Exactly. Yep. Mm-hmm.
But we have it on good authority that that's how it goes. And I mean, I think it is primarily men, though, based on the history.
Yeah, you know.
of who's gotten in and all of that stuff.
But there, I mean, the two men that we talked to were... removed in an effort to get rid
to
of
diversify the,
oh.
the nom-com,
older white men,
if you will.
Yeah.
We call it the nom-com now. There's a lingo.
We have a
we
lot
call
of terms.
It the nom-com. It's pretty cool. Yeah, so that's how they decide. There's a group of people, music journalists, musicians. They are in a room once a year. They get together. They go around the horn. They're like, here's who I think should be in. And everyone was like, and they... Then at the end, they pass her in a hat. They put in who they want. They put in their top
Yeah, pretty
three.
Much. They, each person, there's like it's like 30 members, give or take, on this committee. And then they put in the names of the people they think should be nominated. And then at the end of that meeting...
They eat a big hoagie.
Well, it's more like...
The sandwich has been mentioned by both people who came in,
because it's...
The sandwich is from a big deli. It's from
Carnegie Deli.
And they get a big sandwich, and that's a big deal. It's a big part of it.
Eat a lot of pastrami.
I feel like it's, this is, I mean, I feel like it just feeds into the lore for me, the legend of it.
Yeah.
It's just white dudes eating pastrami.
Now, Emily, do you, coming into this.
Yeah. Yes.
This is the entry point.
Any familiarity with the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame? What do you know? What do you think you know?
here's my familiarity with the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. So, it's in Cleveland, right?
Yes.
So when I was, on tour opening for Anthony Jeselnik, we had a tour stop in Cleveland, and they have just big sculptures of electric guitars all over that fucking city.
Mm-hmm.
And I made him take a picture of me with everyone we saw. And he was not happy about it. And that's about it.
Wait, is it like how, okay, like in Chicago for a while, they had those cows all mm-hmm. over the
it's,
city?
It's like that. It's like a that. Lot it's like that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, in, they're like painted like
different,
you know,
colors and different styles. Places and styles and like in yeah. homage to the places that they are set yeah. up as well.
And you could take pictures where you're pretending to play them, but they're really big.
Whoa. Yeah. Well, that's funny. Playing uh-huh. a really big guitar. In Peoria, Illinois, where I went to college, they had pigs. All over town.
All right.
Peoria pigs on parade.
Hmm.
And they were all over town painted different ways. So Cleveland has guitars. Peoria has pigs. Chicago had cows. Has Los Angeles ever had one of those sculpture dudes?
There were a bunch of hearts all over San Francisco for a while, I think. Okay. Or am I thinking of a different city? I don't know. I feel like this is like a common sort of
yeah.
public art thing.
Right. Have a theme.
Yeah.
And then...
I am truly curious. This is the kind of stuff I care about, where I'm like, ooh, fun. What's every city's little
statue?
I like genuinely uh-huh. care. Mm-hmm. If someone just had that information and could tell it to me yeah. right now, I would not, no joke, listen to the entire thing and be very interested.
Mm-hmm. As far as I know, Los Angeles does not have anything like that.
What would ours be? I don't know. Money?
Wow.
Well, I guess we've got the Walk of Fame. That's kind of our.
I would say yeah. mirrors.
Probably mirror. Ooh, wow.
That would be
how deep,
very
Joe.
Dangerous.
How deep.
Commentary.
Especially with the sun.
Yeah.
Right. It's reflecting just in driver's eyes.
We have so many wildfires happening right now. I think it would be stars.
Yeah, I think I agree.
Stars makes the most sense.
Money.
Money and mirrors.
Just bags of money.
Cocaine.
Mirrors, cocaine, hypodermic needles.
Uh-huh.
Oh, man. Okay. Sorry. But you've never been inside. You did
no,
not go inside.
No, I did not go inside, mm-hmm. nor did I want to.
Well, here's a fun fact that is that that's the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame Museum. It's not the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, because the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame cannot be contained within...
Oh, yeah, it's an intangible sort of concept.
It lives in Joe's heart.
There's obviously a connection, and like there are exhibits and parts of that museum that are dedicated to the inductees and the list, so to speak. But there's a surprising disconnect between the museum and the annual induction ceremonies and kind of just the list.
And those ceremonies, I imagine, happen in New York, or do they happen in Cleveland?
Both. They go on and off.
They alternate between Cleveland and New York.
This year it was in Cleveland, and it was a shitty ceremony. Next
it
year...
It sucked so hard. I won't get into it because I go on this tirade too often. This is the first year I've cared or...
First year you what? First year you what?
First year that I have paid attention to the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. And
it was one of the, as someone who has followed it since being a young man, one of the worst years to jump on.
It was, as a dear friend of mine would say, a dirty diaper. We used to go and see the Step Up movies. I really love the Step Up movies. I personally love Step Up 2,
The Streets.
That's my favorite of the franchise. Step Up 3D is very, very bad, though. And my friends and I were very excited, and we sat in the theater and we saw it, and it was so terrible. And as soon as the credits started to roll, my friend just turns to me and goes, "That was a dirty diaper." So that's what I think of when I think of the worst, like
the worst version of a thing.
Yeah. It was a dirty diaper of an induction ceremony.
Who was inducted?
Ooh, this year it was Bon Jovi.
Oh.
It was The Cars, Dire Straits, Moody Blues, and Nina Simone.
It was trash. Yeah. Doesn't even matter. But, and I talk about it too often, because it's the only one that I have to compare
it's
to
your
anything.
Only point of reference in this thing that has existed
and the
for 32
years. And the three YouTube videos
years.
That I've seen of different, like, performances.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, the hall lives in your heart. It is not the museum.
Very well said. What is your Emily? If anything, do you have any interest in music history, or what's your kind of connection to music?
What's your impression of?
What's my relationship with music? That's an impossible thing to sum up.
Well, could you?
I mean, You know, I listen to music. I like music.
There's and if I could get more specific, which is with something like the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, is there anything going on there that
that I have a connection to,
or that could potentially appeal to you?
See, I guess I've like sort of have this weird relationship with, like, it's hard for me to picture bands that I have cared about over the years being inducted into the Hall of Fame, just because it's either they've been in it forever or they never will be.
Mm-hmm.
Because, like, I grew up listening to the music that my parents liked, which was, like, James Taylor, the Beatles, like...
And you grew up in San Francisco?
I grew up in the East Bay, yeah. And those were, like, big parts of my childhood, and...
Were your parents kind of hippie parents?
Yeah, yeah, for sure. And then when I sort of started listening to my own music, it was more like pop punk stuff. Green Day was big. East Bay, you know. Those are our hometown boys. And, like, I listened to a lot of, like, ska and punk. And then, like, in high school, just very predictable path toward, like, emo indie music. Mm-hmm. And then...
I think we followed the same path.
Yeah, there were a lot of people walking that path alongside us.
Yeah, it was a wide road.
Yes, and the so
Boulevard of Broken,
you might say. and so yeah, it's now it's like I'm a little bit more open to whatever than I was at any other point in my life.
Mm-hmm.
But so yeah, the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, nothing about it means anything to me. There's nothing about being part of the, like, I grew up so much sort of like believing that, like, wide acceptance had nothing to do with whether or not I thought your music was good.
Mm-hmm.
That, and it almost might have the opposite
exactly
effect, that, like,
yes,
being right mainstream is more
is
like lamestream.
Okay, yeah. Hold on. Wait, what was that you just said?
I just said lamestream. It was like a play on words.
That's interesting, because you're taking lame, right?
Mm-hmm.
And you're also taking the word mainstream.
Yeah.
And you're combining them.
I did that for the first time.
Hmm.
You all heard it.
That's interesting.
Thank you.
I might write that down.
You'll have to give me credit.
I'll cite you every time. Proper citations. Yeah. So, yeah, often when a group or artist becomes huge, then they lose cool factor.
At least they used to. And now I'm a lot less, you know, of a... snob about that.
I think we might have passed we're in a post sellout
era.
Oh, yeah. Do we talk about that with Barrett, maybe? The
right,
idea
yes
that, like, it used to be so, like, your music's in a commercial, man. Like,
yeah,
you sold
sell
out.
Yeah.
You're with the man now.
I listened to a lot of ska music that was specifically about the concept of selling out.
Yeah, there's a song by Real Big Fish called Sell
right
Out.
Yeah.
The most, and then there was also Less Than Jake had a song.
Oh, yeah.
What was that song that was like,
All my
Johnny friends. Quest thinks we're selling out.
Yes.
Yeah. and so for me, it was like this concept that I was like, God, I hope I don't become a sellout. And I was like, what did I think?
Yeah, it's like, I hope I never make any money and people don't ever know who I am.
Yeah.
Right.
Like, and Real Big Fish is still like touring and they have to, you know?
Yeah.
Like,
if they maybe would have sold their shit to a few more commercials back when they were featuring ska in commercials and not just like movies about high school.
Yeah. And you know what's weird is, like, I literally just sold out. Not really. But, like, I do think that, like, the comedy equivalent is, like, getting off the road to take a TV writing job. And I've basically done that this year.
And now I
take time off from TV to do the road, but it's like I have to, like, prepare to not make as much money when I do that.
You've become the
which is like,
but
fine.
Also, don't you think everyone on the road is like, man, I wish I didn't have to be on the road?
No,
all
some
the
people
time
love it.
Yeah.
Some people do wish they were not on the road, but
although
I think it
it's
depends
funny, it's you think about selling out and you think about artistic credibility,
right?
And I think you were writing for Barry on HBO, that show specifically, I think, has the credibility that is almost like the opposite. It's like, well, do you want to? I guess I don't know. It's hard.
I work. I mean, HBO is owned by AT&T now, so let's be real.
Yeah, right.
AT&T, which just merged with Time Warner. So,
oh boy,
I'm working for
the man.
The man. That being said, HBO is the first network that I've written for where, like, we get their notes, and I'm like, yeah, Agreed.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Oh, good note.
Yeah, good note.
We should do that.
Yeah.
Good note, H.
Right. Yeah. Greg Barrett had brought up to us was kind of a generational divide of, I mean, what kind of defines Gen X is not caring about anything and being over everything. You can't like anything. The idea even of expressing any joy is considered to be a faux pas. And you just have to, scoff at everything and turn your nose up at everything. And it feels like our generation, I think, has gone too far in the other direction.
Of earnestness?
Well, also, no. I think of nerd culture where, like, people define themselves by the things that they like.
Like, fandom is huge for our generation. We swung in the other direction. Yeah, where we're like, well, I'm a Harry Potter nerd, or I like Star Wars, and that's my personality, mm-hmm. or whatever.
But it's also really fickle, too, because we have these, like, big, like, I feel like the cycle of, like, lifting someone up and then like the backlash has gotten the timeline mm-hmm. for that has gotten shorter and more intense
mm-hmm.
for art with us. It feels like
yes
in some ways an inevitable cycle, but like there's not as many like persistent sort of lasting stars of our generation, but
yeah.
I don't know if that's generational or if it just has something more to do with like the way the media works.
I think the way the mm-hmm. media is so is much faster.
Everything
now.
Is just going.
I think part
quickly.
Of the like Gen X thing was like there was a real mainstream media around which you couldn't navigate, and a lot of decisions about like what was consumed were decided not by people,
mm-hmm.
and so it was like this real badge of honor to sort of like. circumvent that and find your own culture outside of it. At least if you were a white person, if you were not a white person, you were forced to do that. And now it's like we all have access to like anyone's SoundCloud album.
Yeah, mm-hmm.
we get to just like whatever. You know, it's not like a badge of honor to have found other music to listen to.
Well, yeah, that's right. Like, I remember my friends who are just a little bit older than I am, like, they talk about how much they would have to, like, search to find music, like, you know, to be in a record store, like, genuinely looking for, like, import single. Like, my one friend was a really big Matthew Sweet fan, and she used mm-hmm. to order, like, zines so that in the back of the zine she could find, like, these, like, rarities of his collection that, like, meant so much to her because she had to work so hard to get them, you know?
Yeah.
And that doesn't really, that kind of thing doesn't exist as much. But you can get, that means that, you know, more people have access to more things.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
You can like what you like. I also think, though, I think the millennial generation has, like, the millennial generation and kind of, like, what's the next one? Gen Z, I think, is what they're calling the people after the millennials. Okay. I read that somewhere recently.
The thing is, they called millennials Gen Y until they came up with the
millennials.
Right term.
Yeah.
Right?
Millennials.
They just never came up with anything other than Gen X. But, yeah.
Right.
But like, and now
but
they're calling
all of these generations are myths and constructions. So
mm-hmm.
but
anyway,
kind of like the younger people of today, I feel like because the economy has been so shitty their whole lives and all of this other stuff, they're like, hell yeah, make money, do whatever you want to do. Like, money is cool again. Like, it wasn't that cool. Not that it wasn't everybody needed and, you know, benefited from money, but like mm-hmm. like
yeah.
there was this thing where it was like, you're trying to make money.
Money
off
is
this,
more
man.
Of the, more of a myth now in some ways.
And also I think it's like people just they're more unabashed. Like, we consume with such like abandon. It's unabashed, like bragging and saying like, look at my giant, like the people
that
has
been
revere.
Forever though
yes.
like that's always there's always some people who think that's cool.
Oh, totally. Mm-hmm. But I think it's gotten more so where it's like I look at like the Kardashians or like people who are Instagram famous or things like that, and it's more, it is just more overt. I think that people used to feel much more like a little more embarrassed
people
about
felt,
their wealth.
Yeah, people felt a lot more conflicted, at least about doing commercials.
Yes. Oh, right. My gosh. Doing
that,
commercials.
That, I think, has been a big change.
There's no commercial that doesn't have a celebrity in it. it feels.
Yeah.
And
it's not like a lame, like it's no longer the era of people going to Japan to do commercials.
Exactly.
Yeah,
and hoping no one would see it.
Or the way that like even bands can get their big break from being in a commercial. I remember there were like iTunes commercials and things like that. Like bands got their big break from being in commercials. That used to be, I just like the Beastie Boys will not allow their music to be in ads. And I was a very big Beastie Boys fan. I continue to be. But like that was, they're kind of, I feel like the last, that's kind of like they're, I can't think of anybody else.
You know,
Pearl Jam, they won't do ads. Who
I
else?
Don't know how they feel now, but I think there was a very distinct divide, and it's talked about in that book, Meet Me in the Bathroom.
Oh yeah, the Strokes.
The
are
Strokes
the
were
kinda,
the,
yeah.
The Strokes were like the last band that was like, no way, we will not be in a commercial, and they gave up some extremely lucrative ad campaign that I think someone,
Franz Ferdinand, took it.
Honestly, like, yes, like some contemporary of theirs picked it up, and it changed everything for them, and it gave them the boost that the Strokes could have used and bands of that era needed in order to get to that next level.
I mean, it's wild. People do not. Yeah, there is no shame in the game anymore. No.
Mm-hmm. No, hold on. What is that you just said?
Okay, so I said no shame in the game.
Okay.
I made a rhyme up.
I'm writing that down.
You might say there's no such thing as the shame stream media anymore.
Whoa.
Okay, hold on. Okay. I'm drawing arrows in between my two things very furiously.
This is taking up a lot of space.
I remember the first time I heard, I might be Carnival Cruise, but they have Lust for Life by Iggy Pop.
Oh my gosh.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, I thought you were going to say, do you remember, I remember from my childhood, Kathy Griffin doing the Carnival Cruise Lines theme song, which was.
I do not remember this.
All right, everybody. It goes like this. If it's, I think it might be a parody of another song, but I don't know the other song.
This is Kathy Griffin, the comedian.
No, not Kathy
Griffin.
Kathy
Lee Gifford.
Kathy Lee Gifford.
Okay.
Thank you.
That makes way more sense.
Yeah. That's what it, something was not adding up.
Yeah. Not only does that make more sense, but I'm also no longer interested in hearing it.
It's like, hold on.
Singing a parody song for. I think that it is maybe a song. Okay. If they could see me now out on a fun ship cruise. I'm eating fancy food and doing what I do.
Are that you was. Trying to convince me to induct Kathy Lee Gifford into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame?
Did it work?
Yeah, I'm
I
ready.
Like the idea of like taking a cruise as a revenge fantasy.
Yeah, it literally is. If my friends could see me now. I think it was like maybe a reworking or a parody of some song called If They Could See Me Now, which might be like an old standard that I don't know.
Yeah.
But
do you guys know what I'm talking about with the Iggy Pop
yes,
song?
Yes, I remember that as well.
That was so.
That was not as cool as when Kathy Lee Gifford did.
No, you're right.
No, but that is wild. Like Iggy Pop, there are certain people, we also hold different artists to different standards.
Yeah.
You know, like nobody is mad that Beyonce is doing a Pepsi commercial and she already has millions of dollars, you know, because she's a pop artist. I think pop artists versus rock artists.
There's a,
we maybe give them a harder time. We maybe give rock artists a harder time.
Yeah. It almost makes more sense for like a pop star to be in a commercial. I mean, you think of Michael Jackson in like a Pepsi commercial.
Yeah, Pepsi's like got that. All the
We're also
more like Popsy.
We're harder on people Stop where it seems like hypocrisy than we are on people
who
are just who are just like unabashedly commercial.
Yeah.
Which is odd.
Right, yeah, because it's like it's no surprise that Britney Spears would be in a commercial. Because
right. And you're like, but if someone has done something good for other people and they do a commercial, we're like, fuck you.
Yeah, we're like, how dare you? You're not cool anymore. Huh.
This episode is brought to you by Stamps.com.
Oh, yeah, we've got a lot of sponsors.
There is a piece of a new Hall of Fame content that is heavily branded.
What?
That is for the inductees this year.
Is it the Mountain Dew
Code Red?
Or is it like
induction
the
induction zone?
Yeah, is it the Red Bull you know, Wings Award?
Mm-hmm.
And it's given to Wings every year.
What it is it's they are taking those like so when artists are inducted, they will air during the induction like a 2 or 3 minute documentary to get you like pumped up on the band.
Oh, the package. Joe has told me several times that this is one of the best parts of any induction ceremony.
And you would agree.
The package.
Like where they like package all their footage and blah, blah, blah. And he thought it would make me like the Moody Blues. It didn't. But
it
got me closer. And it definitely got me revved up for Bon Jovi and freaking Dire Straits, dog. I was like, you know what? They were interesting. I was like, they had a lot going on.
I will say, I got pretty excited recently when I realized what John Bon Jovi's real name was.
Bon Jovi.
Look up how it's spelled, guys. Yeah. It's going to really blow your mind.
That's what his kids go by. That's their last name.
It's their real last name.
Yeah, Bon Jovi.
Bon Jovi.
Bon Jovi.
Bon Jovi.
Bon Jovi.
Hey, Johnny. I can hear it. Singing me living on a prayer.
How dare you? Wait, so they're branding it. So it's
anyway,
like,
so
it's
they,
gonna, it's
they
gonna
are
be like
supersizing those documentaries.
Oh,
and
no,
like close,
by McDonald's?
It's PNC Bank,
oh my
which
God.
Is a weird one.
What?
But like you can find now maybe 6 or 7 minute like short little documentaries.
PNC,
on the abductees.
Does that stand for pretty not cool?
Yeah. How did you know?
Because it's pretty not cool that they're doing that.
Well, I mean,
they're doing the PNC Bank. Like, is there going to be like a little frame around it?
It's like,
or like in the corner.
I think
it's
at the
say
beginning
PNC
it
Bank.
Says "Brought to you by PNC," and then it's just like kind of longer little documentaries, longer little. Yeah, like 6 or 7.
Instead of them being like 3 minutes, they're going to be like 7 minutes.
I watched the Dire Straits one, and you know what? I liked it.
Wait, oh, this is not. They've already done this.
Yeah, and I think they might still be rolling them out, but
they're
like
just,
I saw,
this is only online content though.
Uh-huh.
This isn't like during the ceremony. They're
no.
not going to be like
this is
big
post...
up to PNC for helping us put this on.
Yeah,
okay.
This isn't Keith Richards going like I want to thank PNC.
Yeah.
For
but they
us
might
here.
Be like have their logo on the step and repeat.
On the what?
Oh yeah, on the
step
and
repeat.
The little thing. The little thing
that's
behind.
The like wallpaper thing that you take pictures of
yes,
on the red
yes,
carpet.
Yes. Okay.
Yeah.
Right.
Well, oh my God, you really have what was the
gone
you
Hollywood.
Have sold out.
I have, yeah.
But this is yeah, this is a some post induction when nothing's going on with the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame as it is right now. Just like little documentaries that they're releasing.
They're like we're going to re-release a longer version of this stuff.
I don't even yeah, I mean they are
Is the hall trying to be a year-round thing?
I don't think so. I think they know what they are.
I don't know.
We
about
are off
that.
Season right now.
I don't
now,
know
really.
if they know what they are.
The cycle begins in October.
Yep.
And that's when the nominees are announced.
Oh,
Joe's gonna read them to me live.
Yes.
On the
there's and it's a list of about 20 artists.
And so every year people are nominated, and not all of them get inducted.
Correct.
Mm-hmm.
Oh shit!
Yeah.
High drama.
Oh my gosh! Like, what if Whitney Houston or Pat Benatar or Dolly Parton? Or the B-52s.
These are all names that are going to come up.
These are
up
all people
very soon.
Who are not in. Yeah.
These are not. Yeah, these are people who are not in that I really want to be in. Janet Jackson.
Uh-huh. Here's the thing. What's the? And I'm. You know, I don't want to talk too much about things that you've probably talked about on the podcast before. But like, Dolly Parton, country star. Mm-hmm. Is
Here's
she?
The
does
thing,
she qualify?
They have rappers in there. They have Johnny Cash
okay.
in there. So to me, she does. But to the Academy, the NomCom,
it's hard to tell. It feels like they. Do not consider country to be rock and roll based on who's in.
And they also don't consider like pop R&B to be rock and roll, it seems like.
Well, I mean, I don't know that that's true.
Well, then who's in there that's pop R&B?
I would say Hall & Oates are very pop
that's
R&B.
That's the tributary. It's opening it up, but it hasn't happened. They're like...
This seems like, are there black people?
Yeah. I mean,
oh,
they're,
sure.
yeah, NWA
well, are there black
is in
R&B?
There, Tupac
yeah.
is in there,
okay.
right?
Yeah, so of the hip hop acts that are in the hall, Grandmaster Flash and the Furious Five, Run DMC, Public Enemy, NWA,
Beastie Boys,
Tupac, yes, and the Beastie Boys.
Okay,
and then of I mean like some of those early years are primarily black artists because it's like Sam Cooke and Ray Charles
right.
and James Brown and Little Richard and Chuck Berry, and then you know over those first few years, you know you're getting Stevie Wonder in there, Aretha Franklin, Tina Turner.
Not
Tina Turner.
Excuse me,
Tina Turner. Tina is not in there on her own, and I really, I won't go into it again, but it is absolute bullshit that someone must forever be associated with their abuser. I do not like it. Honestly, just even take Ike out. You don't have to re-induct her.
Just make a statement.
Just make it and just
have
be like
a deduction ceremony for Ike
there
Turner.
There we go. Do it in the off season. I don't care.
Yeah.
Right.
I really don't like that. Also,
So the Hall has a good history of inducting a lot of important foundational soul artists and R&B artists. And within the past few years, though, it has taken kind of a turn towards a lot of the classic rock white bands that they had snubbed for a long time.
Yeah.
Clearing out the bottom of the barrel here.
Bench clearing. Yeah.
Right. So, you know, we got Nina Simone this year and also Sister Rosetta Tharpe, which were two great inductions, but those were also a very long time coming.
Yeah.
So you're getting, racially, you're getting not much of a balance, but it's...
Or gender-wise. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Surprise, surprise.
Shocking.
But I will say...
More like Cock and Balls Hall of Fame.
What?
Has anyone said that before?
No.
No.
Really? I do think you just
Cock and Hole Balls Hall of Fame. No, Cock and Hole... I'm trying to... Cock and Hole Balls of Fame. There we go.
Oh, yeah. Cock and Hole Ball of Fame.
I'm trying to line up the syllables.
Yeah, but I'm saying there's not enough holes.
Boy, I just am wondering why this was never thought of before. Now it's suddenly occurring to me, like, why this hasn't happened.
I will say, I mean, my last name is Heller, and it took me until about last year to realize I could have been saying HEHockeySticks to spell it my whole life.
Oh, that's so good.
Wait until I was 30 to figure that out.
Jesus. Aww. That's really too bad.
I know.
My last name is Stuttered, and it's taken me forever to just be like, it only just has one D in the middle. I know it sounds like it has two. That's my go-to.
Yeah.
Oh, gosh. How about Quizzle?
You guys have real hard names. Wow. All the struggles you guys have gone through with your last names. I have no idea.
Yeah. I never claimed it was a struggle. I'm just saying I'm embarrassed for not thinking of the joke.
Yes, yes, yes. Of course.
Joe, do you have any special ways that you tell people to spell or pronounce your name?
Pronounce it, I say silent C, if they can even get to that point. Usually like the combination of letters strikes fear into their heart to the point where they don't even know where to begin. Just because those letters in that proximity, I think, really just
the
makes
C
people
and the
nervous.
Z is a very hard. That's a disconcerting in the middle.
In
too.
The middle,
and
so
you've
close.
Already got a K and a W.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a lot
going
on.
Yeah, it's really too bad.
How do you tell people to spell it when you're? Do you have like a special
in chunks of two? K W A C Z A L A. That's usually the best way to do it. For a while, I did it KWACZALA. But I think
you can't put the C in the Z.
Exactly.
People are like, no.
People are like, what is that? I don't understand.
Huh? Yeah.
Then you have to start over.
Those. So now, chunks of two, baby. Chunks of two.
Like Noah's Ark.
I was just interested. I was like, this is genuinely a thing we've never talked about on the podcast.
Somehow that hasn't come up on our Rock and Roll Hall of Fame podcast. I don't know why.
You guys didn't have like an episode about like how your inductions would go and what
we
you
should.
Would.
Now,
who would I want to induct me? Eddie Vedder. I'm kidding.
No, he would do it.
He would.
Eddie Vedder inducts everybody.
He inducts everybody. He's like, he's like, he's in the inductors Hall of Fame.
He shows up.
Opinion.
He shows up quite a bit.
Yeah.
I'm like trying to think of like who has the worst last name in the Hall of Fame, like the most confusing.
Tell you has the worst first name, Fats.
Fats Domino.
I don't think that's his real first name.
No, it's
no, it is. It's Fatua. Oh, Fatua.
Right.
Fatua.
What is it? Patrick?
Patrick, yeah.
Patrick. Okay, well, that was my one joke that I had about that. Mm-hmm. Do you have anything, Joe? No?
No, I don't. I was maybe going to come up with a boring real answer, like the bass player for the Cars last name.
What's his last name?
Well, he goes by Ben Orr, but that's because his last name was like Orr-Chesky.
Kristen. Jokes. Just jokes. Just making jokes. What's his name? Orr-Chesky?
It was something very Polish. It was like Orr-Chesky.
Gosh, that must be horrible to have a
Polish last
name.
Yeah. It must be a not so good.
Do you have any feelings about the existence of the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame?
I feel like, have we covered this?
All right, I'll take it.
I don't. That's the thing. I don't. Yeah.
You're not mad that it exists or anything. Sometimes I get mad that it exists.
Oh.
I was just looking for another person to be on my team.
I think that's because, Emily, you probably never think about it.
I never think about it. I'm not, like, I haven't, like, put myself in this sort of Stockholm syndrome situation that you're in right
now.
Yeah,
why have I done this to myself?
You've devoted many hours of your life now to this institution.
We're
for
on
which...
at least hour 18, probably hour in the 20s.
The trick that... I think the way that it can kind of draw you in the hall is that it can be great.
And once you start knowing that, like, people have been wronged, you want to make it right. And
so you get invested the way you do in any sort of competition where you're like, I want the right people to win. I mean, it's like, I haven't watched it in a long time, but like, I never agreed with who won Project Runway, and I always cared.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
yeah, and you know, and I mean, yeah, the only shows that I can, the only like reality shows I like are like skill based competition ones. I love So You Think You Can Dance,
yeah,
and like I liked Project Runway, I liked Top Chef.
So the hall is almost like, so let's say your favorite person does not win Project Runway,
yeah,
the hall is like, I'm trying to compare it to like, what about what if next season they could win?
Right.
And then they don't win that season, but they could win next season.
Yeah.
And what about the...
It's just like ongoing trauma.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But the...
Boy, you've just said, you've given Joel an inch, and here he goes. He's like, you're right. It is. It's interesting and exciting.
You're right. It is cool.
I mean, I wasn't trying to say ongoing trauma, like that makes it more appealing.
But it's
like,
no, I hear trauma and I'm like, oh, that's good. That's like, I'm drawn to that.
I thought it was drama.
The thing that the way I would call it a trick, because you're like, oh, but it could, because we could have a very good class next year.
This is the same sort of thing that like lights up in the brains of like gambling addicts when they win one hand.
They're like, I'm due.
They're chasing, yeah.
Yeah, they're
chasing.
Or it's like,
high.
It's like when you pull a slot machine and it goes cherry, cherry, bell. You're like, I almost had it.
Uh-huh. You're like, wow, yeah. The cure so almost
close.
Got in. Mm-hmm.
The hope that I felt in that moment, I want to feel that hope again and have it be satisfied.
And then you're like, well, I lost three times in a row. I surely can't
gotta
lose
win
again.
Now. But but you know what's different is, unlike gambling, the odds do improve every year, don't they? Because like when you're gambling, every time you, oh my gosh, I'm making a fucking, I can't.
Well,
Joe's
an
lighting
argument
up because he loves when this happens. But
it's the idea of like, well, next year I certainly hope Bon Jovi doesn't get inducted again. When you clear out some of the shitty ones, it does make things better.
You know Bon Jovi's not going to get inducted again unless he starts a side project that really takes off.
He could be inducted as a solo artist.
He gets inducted twice before freaking Tina Turner gets in twice, or Whitney Houston gets in single times, or Janet Jackson gets in single times.
Once is the word you're looking for.
Yeah. No, I think single times. No, I've really been a pioneer of language on this episode, and I don't feel like people are respecting it. Has Mariah Carey ever been nominated?
No, she has not.
She was on your list of snubs.
She certainly was.
She's never
been
nominated?
She's not been eligible for very long, but yeah.
I mean, I just tell you right now, if Mariah Carey gets in before some of those other divas.
I know, right?
Catfight. Like, that's.
Do we not care about a sense of order? And the answer is not really.
No.
Put in the divas.
Yeah.
I've put also made many an impassioned plea about how just all of the classes of divas of
can
VH1
we
Divas Live.
A Divas Hall of Fame? Because that feels like those ceremonies would be a lot more fun.
They would be like the reemergence of VH1 Divas Live. And that is a moment in time that
Hall of
bring
Divas.
Bring them back.
And it would be like sort of aesthetically kind of like a Mount Olympus.
Oh,
like,
my gosh. Would they be carved into it?
Oh, my God. Marble statues. I think they'd all be okay with that.
It'd be beautiful.
That seems on brand.
Yeah.
For nearly every diva.
Oh, gosh. Give me a Hall of Divas any day. You can keep your Rock Hall. I'll take the Hall of Divas.
So many of those divas are going to get in, though. I'm curious, though, when that shift is going to happen.
I mean, Aretha... Did you say that Aretha was the first woman inducted into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame?
Wow.
You got the OG diva.
Sets a stage.
That's a main tributary. But how many people have come through diva-wise? Not that many.
It depends on your definition. Yeah.
No Whitney.
Diana Ross?
The Supremes.
Yeah. But no Diana alone.
No. But Supremes are in a lot of a good number of the early girl groups.
Do you know offhand, like, everyone who's in there? Like, if I said something, you would said
yeah.
someone
you
would know.
Probably know.
Uh-huh. Yeah, absolutely.
Wow.
Do you want to test me?
No.
Okay. Well, I gotta go. I'll leave you guys to it.
Genesis.
Yes, 2010.
Really? Peter Gabriel alone.
Yes, 2014.
Can I just say it's fucked up that you know that?
Mm-hmm. Oh, I'm well aware.
This is why this exists.
In a sense, this is a way for me to get it out so that I don't say it in public.
So he doesn't like bore
this
his
is
dates.
Your outlet, yeah.
Phil Collins?
No.
So Peter Gabriel, yes. Phil Collins, no.
Sting?
No.
The He's Police? Been,
he, yes. They're an FYE. They are
the
first
Police.
Year eligible.
Oh yeah. Yeah. FYE is first year eligible.
So like they get inducted the first year that they're
eligible?
As soon
as they're eligible, yeah.
And what makes you eligible?
25 years after your first recording.
And that's it. That's the only public criteria.
Interesting.
Yeah. Yeah.
This makes me... Now I want to look up the people that I wanted to talk about and see...
Oh, they're
they've
eligible.
Been eligible.
They've been eligible, right?
They've been eligible for
quite
since
some time.
Maybe 2010 or something.
So we're talking an eight-year snub now.
Yes. Right.
Depending on how this year goes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, anything can happen. Wait, question.
Yes.
Wait, so
I'm just building
suspense. Why Peter Gabriel? Well, people will know in the episode title, I think.
But it's fun to pretend.
I love it too. Yeah. Hey guys, I wonder who she could be talking about. Who could it be? Wait, so why Peter Gabriel? And I mean, I think that Peter Gabriel is a cool artist.
Yeah.
And I think he like is awesome. But why no Phil? Is he too poppy? Do you think that's why he was too commercially successful?
Yeah, I think...
Because I think that's kind of like rude.
Well, I think if you compare Peter Gabriel's output, if you're just comparing the work, Peter Gabriel's and Phil Collins, I think Peter Gabriel's is more challenging. I think it is more artistic. I think Phil Collins is more empty. I mean, it's less... Do you get what I'm going for?
Take a look at me now. No, I really think it's just more poppy. I think it's less challenging, more poppy, more popular.
Mm-hmm. And like Peter Gabriel.
And less cool. Like Peter Gabriel has like cred. He's got street cred. He's like.
And has released what, I mean, we talk about our criteria. But like Peter Gabriel has put out classic albums, has critical acclaim. He has. So many iconic songs. And then Phil Collins, does he really have a classic album like No Jacket Required?
Yeah.
If you compare that to So by Peter Gabriel, I think it's a pretty stark comparison.
I mean, but then you compare it to Slippery When Wet and you're like, huh, maybe Phil Collins could be in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame.
Yeah.
I'm just saying like, you know.
I think Phil Collins is also damaged by the
kitsch
way,
factor that he is now.
Well, the way we dismiss 80s, a lot of 80s sounding music.
Do you think he's got the Toto effect?
I mean, the production of a lot of 80s pop has not aged very well.
Right.
And there's a lot of Peter Gabriel music from the 80s that seem to...
like Sledgehammer still slaps. Like, that song is still cool.
That has withstood the test of time
doesn't
better
suck.
Than when you listen to Sue Studio, it's almost like a joke.
Yeah. But a fun joke.
Yeah, it's a very fun joke that you can, you know.
But I mean, yeah, also,
and to
I
be
think
fair,
listen...
I'd rather attend the Fun Joke Hall of Fame induction ceremony. Yeah.
Well, and but my, I mean.
Who gets in first ballot? Whoopi Cushion? Rubber Chicken?
One of those joy boxes buzzer. With the boxing glove in it that pops out when you turn the crank?
I think it gets on the ballot. It doesn't get in first year.
Yeah.
The
yeah.
boxing glove in
because no one's actually seen that
well,
happen.
I'm just right. wondering, is like, when is your mom going to be eligible?
Damn.
I'll tell you something she's been eligible for a while. Sucking my dick.
Boo, your mom.
Whoa.
Hey. Wait, I do want to talk about Bill Cosby.
A little bit more? So, yeah, you can.
A little bit more. Who would have thought that I would care? But I guess I'm just saying, like, you know, Sue Studio compared to I Can't Go For That.
Yeah, the thing is, even,
I'm just
even
saying,
there...
Like, I don't think that Hall & Oates is, like, less cheap. Like, You Make My Dreams Come True is a great song, mm-hmm. but it's, like, a cheesy, fun 80s... song.
I think
essentially Wake Me Up Before You Go-Go.
But like there is a slight...
But doesn't it predate Wake Me Up Before You Go-Go?
It does, mm-hmm. yeah. But I just mean like if we're saying that
like lightness.
Sue Studio and like, you know, that like Phil Collins is too poppy and light and vapid to be taken seriously, I'm like...
I feel like there's like an element of working backwards from the induction toward the reasoning. When really it's probably a yeah. bit more arbitrary than mm-hmm. that.
Yes, for sure. It's,
and
it's
I
hard
also
to...
think that like Phil Collins suffers because he has to be compared to Peter Gabriel.
Yeah, probably.
You know, it's like how like not that like Ringo was ever going to get in on his own, but he's like would definitely not get in on his own when you are comparing him to Paul McCartney.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so, without a doubt.
Who is in on his own?
Ah, yeah.
Could, I mean... Come on.
That makes sense.
Yeah, I mean, Phil Collins could wind up on the ballot. I could see it happening.
I'd be here for him getting in. I think he's pretty good.
But I just think there's probably a lot of people who would go, Phil Collins sucks. That's probably the bottom line.
I thought there was going to be more to them.
No.
There was not. I thought there would be some insight who would go, Phil Collins sucks.
I do think there's a possibility that everyone who cares about the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame is going to die.
Eventually.
before the numbers are replenished.
Oh, yeah. Well, that's why they've got to keep... That's why they are kind of culling the nomcom and like
oh, yeah.
trying to...
They're
know.
Doing the thing that the Oscars committee did.
Yeah.
Which, by the way... So. Did they just do like a recent overhaul of that?
Yeah,
this last year. I think they, I don't know if they culled people from the roster, but they definitely added like a lot, thousands of people, right?
The Rock Hall?
No.
The Oscars.
The Oscars.
Oh, no, I know when the Oscars did it, but I mean, like, did the Rock Hall do that?
The Rock Hall in like around 2015 got rid of a lot of people from the nominating committee. Yeah. got rid of maybe half the people from the nominating committee.
Because I was going to say, like, there were immediate results for the Oscars mm-hmm. doing that, mm-hmm. and yes. I don't think we talk about that enough, that, like, they realized they had a problem, they changed their numbers immediately after that Moonlight one.
Right.
And now, if the Rock Hall is going to do that, I do think there will be immediate results.
Well, the Rock Hall did something like that, and it like backfired.
A few years ago,
really?
Right?
They did it.
They immediately inducted Adolf Hitler.
he's an artist. For the 2016 ceremony was when the nominating committee had been really pared down from maybe like...
For wait, 2016, did you say?
Yeah, for that. And
was that the Pearl Jam year?
No.
No.
But that was a year before. The 2016 year
who
is
who got in 2016, Joe?
Lame.
Tell
it's
us off
lame.
The top of your head.
Cheap Trick, Steve Miller Band, Chicago, Deep Purple, and NWA.
Wow.
Oh, we talked about this before. That is a weird class.
And a lot of those were people who were bands who had not been on the ballot before. And then like they did this culling. All of a sudden they showed up on the ballot and they got in immediately.
That's crazy.
Yeah. You would think, yeah. I mean, Los Lobos showed up on that ballot.
Hell yeah.
I mean, that's I like for the first time. And the only, I mean, NWA got in because of the movie. It like lined up
yeah.
perfectly. They had
and
been on the ballot four times.
Oh, mm-hmm. And that's like that we've often talked about how like having a movie. That's why Whitney, although apparently, I don't know if the documentary, we still haven't seen it. First of all, we've got
to go. It's supposed
to
be great.
I've heard too, though, it's quite, you know, I mean, it's like Amy, you know, it's like challenging because she had this like difficult
problem.
Life or whatever. And I've heard also that the third act like kind of makes some big revelations where you're like, whoa.
Oh, yeah.
Did you see it?
No, but I've heard about it.
I listened to some interviews
that
about
she
it.
Is basically gay and that.
I had heard that also she had suffered like sexual abuse and stuff like that too.
Oh yeah, I'm sure.
I've seen that as well. Yeah.
But that like sort of being forced into the closet is part of the what contributed to her. I shouldn't talk about this if I haven't seen the documentary. But
interesting.
That, like, this is what I've heard, that being
Once
forced back into the closet
it,
is sort of
we'll get
well.
Into it. But I just mean why was I talking about Whitney Houston? I'm always
talking about documentaries.
About
the
oh,
way
how that affects oh, people's yeah. like how likely they are to get in.
Yeah, yeah. If they're brought back into the conversation with something like a documentary,
yeah, or a biopic,
can,
I guess. Yeah,
yeah. Then that
it's
can
like the
get
What Happened
talking.
Miss Simone, like
yeah.
That effect was a little delayed, but I think
it just
it did
like
help.
Ramped up. It brought mm-hmm. her back into the popular into conversation. The,
yeah. mm-hmm.
Then there was that Handmaid's Tale episode. Where they walk to Feeling Good. All the handmaidens walk down the street to Feeling Good.
Yeah.
It's like an iconic shot from, I think, the finale of Handmaid's Tale. Why yikes?
Hmm?
Why yikes?
Because Feeling Good and the juxtaposition.
Yeah, it seems like an upsetting image.
Yeah.
It's,
I don't watch the show.
Oh, it's I have not watched the second season because I am too afraid of how it will make me sad
mm-hmm. yeah.
and
yeah.
upset. The first season is incredible, and I really enjoyed it. I think it is better than the book, and I loved the book.
Wow.
Oh, wow.
Better than the book.
They do a great job. They go to places.
I think most TV is better than most books.
You know what? On the whole, I think I agree with you.
You know what?
I tend to choose TV.
TV rules, man.
TV kicks
Big
ass.
Big Little Lies was just as good as the book, I feel like. Actually, better than the book. Who am I kidding? Big Little Lies is better than the book, too. All right, guys. So what I'm saying is if Big Little Lies is inducted next year, it will be because of the HBO show.
And let's all go and watch them get inducted. Let's talk about the snubbed artist that Emily brought in.
8 years snubbed.
We believe.
Yeah.
The Indigo Girls.
The Indigo Girls. Let's talk about them.
Yeah.
What
is your... I'm curious.
What's your relationship with the Indigo Girls?
Indigo Girls was my first concert. I basically organized a trip for my entire family to go see the Indigo Girls when I was 11 years old. It was like one of those bands that we listened to on long road trips. We all love the Indigo Girls. And like it was sort of like the natural extension of my parents' interest in like Paul Simon and James Taylor and like, you know, Joni Mitchell and stuff.
Like they're the more they were like the modern folk revival.
Yeah, they're mm-hmm. like Torch Carriers a little bit.
You are right.
They're folk. They're actually a little bit more country than I think they're given credit for. But
Well, it's because they're gay.
It's because they're gay. Yes. It's because they are not.
Yeah.
Played by country stations,
exactly.
Even though. But I also don't listen to a lot of country. I don't know exactly how much their sound sort of crosses over. But I saw them. We saw them at the Greek Theater in Berkeley when I was like 11 years old, my entire family.
Oh, there's another Greek Theater. There's one in Berkeley as well.
Yeah.
Okay.
And then I also saw them at Lilith Fair the following year, and then Lilith Fair the following year after that.
Did you go to Lilith Fair when you were youngin?
I was 12 and 13.
Oh, my God.
And
cute.
Then since then, I've seen them probably like 4 or 5 more times as an adult. And I was, you know, big fan as a kid. Still, I've never not been a fan of the Indigo Girls, and part of that has to do with the fact that, like, their live shows are incredibly good. They sound as good as their albums live, which is, I think, really rare. And
they've got that harmony going.
They've got that little close harmony. They're really good musicians. Also, they released, like, a 2-disc live album called 12 O'Clock Curfews that I listened to a lot as a kid. And there were a bunch of Indigo Girls songs on that album that I hadn't heard the studio versions of before I heard that album. So, like, in some ways, I sort of fell in love with the live versions of some of their songs to begin with anyway. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I've seen them in a variety of contexts.
That is so cute to imagine your whole family driving together, singing the Little Indigo Girls together.
Very precious.
Like,
yeah.
My sister walked down the aisle to an Indigo Girls song.
Which one?
It was an instrumental version of Ghost.
Okay.
Yeah. I will say one of my fondest Indigo Girls memories prior to, I think, ever seeing them live was, and probably a formative experience in my life, was in third grade, I think, third or fourth grade, I was hanging out with my friend Remy in her bedroom, and we were playing an Indigo Girls album, and we were listening to Galileo.
Classic tune.
And we were doing hand motions, like trying to mime the words of the Indigo Girls song, and Remy laughed so hard that she peed on the floor. And as a comedian, that was an extremely formative experience, and that's like the dragon I've been chasing for the rest of my life. Yeah.
Oh. There is something about young girls doing choreography.
Yeah.
like to music. I mean, the amount of memories that I have of like being with my friends.
Oh, yeah.
Just trying to.
You really feel like you're preparing for your future as a professional dancer. Like in a real way.
Yeah. And like, all the the literal choreography is just, it's so beautiful and precious and wonderful. Mm-hmm. Here's a fun thing. Do you know anything? How much about the Indigo Girls do you know, Joe?
Well, not a whole ton. I have seen them live, though.
What?
Where'd you see them?
So I saw the Indigo Girls play at Joan Baez's induction at the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame.
Oh, very cool.
In 2017, Joan Baez was inducted, and she played with Mary Chapin Carpenter and the Indigo Girls.
Wow.
That sounds amazing.
It was great. They sounded really cool.
They're awesome. They fucking rock.
That's so cool to imagine that, like, that's a classic just set of four people right there. Wow.
Yeah.
Mary Chapin Carpenter. She's not in the Rock Hall. I'm just checking.
Right.
So the Indigo Girls have been adjacent.
They were at an induction very recently.
And you were there. Do you know anything else about them? You know, what songs can you name up there? Or like what do you think of when you think of the Indigo Girls?
So I was researching for this episode just to see, because I was like, do I know any?
I like to come in. If I don't know anything, I like to make everybody teach me.
Yeah.
So I kind of looked up what their biggest singles were to see if I could. I had definitely heard Closer to Fine.
Yes.
That was one I was like, okay, I've heard this before. And then, you know, I'm going to look up what I grabbed. I grabbed Galileo.
Yeah.
And
those are two probably most consistent encore songs.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
It's usually like they close with one of those and they encore with two songs and one of them will be the other of one of those.
Yeah.
Closer to Fine is a great song.
It is.
I will say now my experience with the Indigo Girls, which is Joe was like, do you know the Indigo Girls? And I was like, definitely more than you do. And he was like, I was like, just by virtue of being a woman who like was in the theater department in college. Uh-huh. Like, I feel like that all kind of like a lot of people there. I was like, you know, like. Casually exposed, like secondhand exposure to a lot of Indigo Girls.
Right. Yeah. There's like an interesting Venn diagram of like Indigo Girls fans and Ani DeFranco fans.
Yes. Also, which I got very into Ani in college.
Yes.
So,
and there's some people for whom it's definitely one and not the other, but definitely a big group that's both.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
And I will say I've had my Ani phases too, but they are less consistent and sparser than my Indigo Girls phases.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think Ani, you kind of have to be like really, you've got to be in the mood for, it's more.
But I will say like, what's interesting is I think that like, both the Indigo Girls and Ani DeFranco have like two modes. And with the Indigo Girls, it's Emily songs versus Amy songs. And with Ani, it's just like two different types of songwriting from the same artist.
Yeah.
And they're both like, I lean heavily more in one direction with both of them.
Ooh, whose songs do you like more?
I mean, and I, you know, I hate to do this, but Emily, obviously. Emily is the excess. Emily's the entry. Everyone's entry point.
Okay, so mm-hmm.
She wrote Galileo. She wrote Galileo Closer to Fine.
Closer to Fine. Yeah, those are the big songs that I know. There was that girls episode in the last, like, second to last season, maybe the last season, where she and her mom are, where, like, Lena Dunham and her mom are going to that, like, outdoor festival. I think the episode is called Man on the Land, but they're, like, listening to the Indigo Girls in the car on the way there. And I'm like, yeah, that's right. And then I just watched Tig's special where she brings out the Indigo Girls at the end.
Incredible.
And I was like, and they played a song. I thought they would play a song that was, I thought they would play one of those two songs. And they played that other song.
Of course, I knew that song. They played Shame on You.
Shame on You.
That's the other one I grabbed. And I grabbed Hammer and a Nail.
Hammer and a Nail is great. A song that I didn't get into until I was an adult. Shame on You, I think, might be an Amy song. And I do think that there's probably a good chance that they didn't play Galileo or Closer to Fine just because it was probably too expensive and they didn't want to.
That's a good call.
What do you mean? I'm sorry, I don't understand how that would work.
Because they would have to pay
more money for Galileo or Closer to Fine. They're more valuable properties.
Oh, they can't just, like, give it.
No. And whatever. I don't know if they would. Because I also think that the Indigo Girls are another one of those bands that survive on touring and occasional licensing.
Because have they ever sold out? I guess if their song was in that Girls episode.
Yeah. Shame on You is an Amy song.
Oh.
Okay.
Yeah. I like that song too. Yeah. Those are the three songs that I'm the most familiar with.
Yeah.
I don't know this Hammer and a Nail song that but we can listen to it if we want to hear it. But we might do that when we're going through the categories.
So as I mentioned, the only real criteria for being inducted into the Hall is 25 years after your first recording.
Yeah.
Yeah, released recording. So that means they were eligible for the 2011 ceremony.
Okay.
But beyond that, it's hard to determine. They've released no other criteria.
Yeah.
So kind of like what you were saying before, taking who's been inducted and kind of reverse engineering
what they're looking for. Yeah.
Yeah. I've come up with a list. Okay. So we're going to evaluate the Indigo Girls based on these criteria. The first is critical acclaim.
Mm-hmm. Ooh. Did they have any critical acclaim?
I think some, but I don't think, I could be wrong, I don't think they're a band that critics necessarily go crazy for. And that might also be an issue with the fact that a lot of critics are dudes.
Yeah. I was going to say, I think too, there's like, I think that that's probably got a lot to do with it. And also, they don't have a lot of, like, cultural cachet outside of the circles that that already like them. Do you know what I mean?
For reference, you guys, they are lesbians. We've mentioned that briefly, but they are.
And they've been out since the 80s, right?
They've been out since they came out. I don't know if they were ever.
They were never closeted.
They were never closeted act.
But, like, they've been releasing albums, like, you
but
know.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. I think, like, they, as a result, I mean, like, women's music in general is considered less virtuosic. And when you aren't considered a virtuoso, even if you are one, like, sex appeal is a big part of what makes you a breakthrough artist, which they don't have for a mass audience. And also it's like they play music that is, aside from, like, Lilith Fair, which is no longer around, they play music that is, like, part of a larger genre that's not actually welcoming to them demographically, which is, like, folk rock. Like, that's not a world that's...
Yeah, it's not, and also that's not like a super, that is also not a world necessarily anymore. Like you said, they're like torchbearers of like these other acts that had been considered like culturally significant, critically acclaimed and things like that. But they kind of like picked up the torch and they kept running with it. But they're just like, it wasn't as like, there wasn't as much social cachet to being like a folk artist anymore. Like, it's almost become a punchline or a joke. You know what I mean? That folk music or the Indigo Girls in particular, like they really suffered from that kind of cultural shift. Yeah.
I also think like lesbian culture in general is not given the space that it deserves in popular media, mm-hmm. the way like gay male culture,
for example,
because
yeah.
it's like it's suffering under the burden of both misogyny and homophobia.
And homophobia. Right, yeah. yeah, I know. I think about that. I think about how many like gay male artists, or how much I know about gay male culture versus how much I know about lesbian culture.
I mean, that being said, like gay male musicians, there's yes, not enough yes, of them agreed. Out mm-hmm. either. But you kind of feel like divas are part of gay male culture in a way too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But yeah,
that's interesting too to mm-hmm. to even just think about yeah that there isn't the space, the cultural space for even them to occupy.
Right.
Right.
They've had to carve that out for themselves.
Mm-hmm. The next category is classic albums. I think maybe the closest thing
to find.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like what do they got?
They're self-titled.
I heard that they had that live album that was really good.
Their self-titled is the one that has closer to fine on it. That's probably the closest one.
But their highest charting album was Shaming of the Sun.
Oh, Power of Two. That's another song that I know.
Yeah, that's a great song.
Right. In 97, Shaming of the Sun went to number 7.
Oh, Get Out the Map. I also know that song. Wow. Okay,
those feel like post-peak.
Get Out the Map.
Yes, yeah. right, yeah.
Which is weird, because it feels like a slow burn. Like, the people who bought Shaming of the Sun were people who had, like, slowly gotten into their previous mm-hmm. albums.
And also, they're people who liked Jewel. You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah.
Like, 97 is when we were kind of, like, that was when the, like, Lilith Fair revival
That's
was
true,
happening.
Yeah.
And that was, like, that was when the cultural
They were selling some
happening.
Of these albums at Lilith Fair.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, right. that's when the cultural moment was happening for them. So I feel like that probably has a lot to do with it, too. That kind of, like, brief moment in time when there was, like, a Jewel, Paula Cole, what's her
Sarah
name?
Sarah McLachlan.
Who started Lilith Fair. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, although the Indigo Girls self-titled did go 2 times platinum, which is quite a feat. But if we're talking about, like, are any of their albums, and this is sort of tied to critical acclaim, are any of their albums ever considered in the grand list as one of the greatest albums of all time? I don't know that there is anything.
Yeah, I don't even know if there's consensus there among Indigo Girls fans. Mm-hmm. I do think that it's, like, they're such personal musicians that, like, people's experience with them feels so personal that you're kind of like, I don't know, what's the album that I listened to the summer we went to Yosemite? That's the one that's the best album. Mm-hmm. You know?
Yeah,
right. There's a personal connection that's meaningful.
Yeah.
Next category
I think too, that's kind of the intimacy of folk singers in particular, of like this type of music is like when people are writing intimate music, it feels like an intimate genre.
But mm-hmm. I also think part of, I mean, like, the Beatles are an exception because they also had, like, two leads who both wrote songs, but their albums had sort of, like, cohesion and themes, whereas mm-hmm. I do feel like the Indigo Girls, they keep their writing credits separate, which I think is in some ways meaningful because it means that their albums aren't necessarily, like, thematic.
Like a thematic. Mm-hmm.
They're not necessarily cohesive. I don't know if I've noticed that. I don't know if I've noticed a theme on any of theirs, in any of their music, mm-hmm. but...
Interesting.
Yeah. The next category is iconic songs.
Wait, and is Emily the blonde one?
Yes.
Okay.
Amy's sexier, but...
Okay. Good to know.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm looking at a picture of them right now at the Essential Indigo Girls.
You got to see them live to pick up on the sex appeal.
Amy's got kind of... Yeah, she's gazing straight into the camera and she's got like a raw sexuality.
Amy is like the harder butcher one, in my opinion, even though they both have like long hair. Like Emily is like
she
softer.
She seems softer, yes.
Emily is softer, yeah. Amy's got this like sort of brooding.
Yeah, she's got kind of a Melissa Etheridge vibe too, that kind of. I
don't
know,
yeah,
I just
she's
feel
got
like
a lot of
gaze
features
and
yeah.
her. I don't know.
Yeah. Even. Anyway, sorry. The next.
Sorry,
yes.
Joe. Welcome back.
Back to my categories. Next up is iconic songs with kind of the subcategory of recognizable songs.
Right.
I don't know if any of
Get Out the Map. I mean, I can't believe how many songs I suddenly recognize.
Here's the thing.
I really did.
Wait, sorry.
College.
What were you going to say?
I was just going to say Closer to Fine certainly is recognizable.
Right.
The closest to iconic.
Closer to Fine featured it prominently in an episode of The Office.
Okay.
Oh, really?
Yes. Which one? It was, and I think it sort of exemplifies to what they mean to people, because it was an episode in season 3.
Was Pam like finding herself?
No.
Okay.
where Jim had been transferred to Stamford, and it was like a late night where he and Andy and Karen were all working late, and Jim and Andy got drunk, and Andy started singing Closer to Fine, mm-hmm. and Jim started singing it along with him, and Andy was so excited. And it was one of those moments where it's like they both realized they knew all the words together, mm-hmm. and it's Did one they- of those songs that people get so excited to sing along with other people. And it was one of those things where it's like, it is a song that Andy didn't expect Jim to know, mm-hmm. but Jim did know.
Yeah.
And that, I think, sort of is the essence of how their songs function in pop culture.
Mm-hmm. They're present without necessarily making themselves known.
They're not ubiquitous, yeah. but they're present. Yeah.
Ooh, yes.
Yeah. Do we want to listen to any of those other...
Yeah, what song would you like for us to listen to?
Well,
what song do you think would make what song do you think would convince us the most of their hall worthiness? Like,
right. Okay, so that's a different question than what song I'd want to play, because obviously I think they belong in the Rock Hall of Fame. The songs that I think would most convince you of that are Galileo and Closer to Fine, just because mm-hmm. they are such important songs mm-hmm. in their discography. But given the opportunity, and I think that like anyone who with a passing interest in the Indigo Girls should find those songs and should listen to them, but given the opportunity to expose people to an Indigo Girls song Ooh. That they may not know.
All right.
God, this is a tough decision.
We can also listen to snippets of many songs.
Yes. Mm-hmm. So something that I did recently, because
I just pulled
up
the essential Indigo Girls.
Is that a playlist that I made?
No,
because that's an album.
Because I do have a Spotify playlist called The Essential Indigo Girls.
Oh,
I have two Indigo Girls Spotify playlists on my phone. One of them is The Essential Indigo Girls, and one of them is Sick Indigo Girls Tracks, which is a playlist that I made by culling their posted playlists on Instagram, their posted set lists from live shows, mm-hmm. because I wanted to prepare myself to go... Yeah. To go to a concert, because I knew there were tracks from the most recent albums that I wasn't as familiar with. So I made a playlist of those songs, and of those songs, the ones that I got the most into, I think I want to pick one of those to expose mm-hmm. people to show them that the Indigo Girls still rock.
Okay, I'm going to play Hammer and a Nail because I don't know this.
Is this a song that's worth jumping to the chorus, or?
I think possibly, yeah.
Okay.
One thing you guys will note about Indigo Girls songs, too, is whoever wrote the song sings lead, and that's a good way to tell who wrote what. And so this sounds like Amy, so I think this is an Amy song.
Yeah. It's...
Yeah.
All right, I'm gonna do a jump.
You jumped it like halfway through the chorus.
I did a great job.
Did they say hammer and a nail yet?
Yeah. Well, we missed it.
Oh. I heard
it's
what
the beginning
rhymed
of
with
the
hammer
chorus.
And a nail. I heard what rhymed with it.
Yeah.
That's pretty good.
A song about building stuff and gardening. You can see why it's an instant lesbian classic.
Yeah, that's really. It all takes place in a Subaru.
Do we want to hear Shame on You?
Yeah, that song's great.
Yeah, and then I've picked my song that I want.
Okay.
Great.
Ooh, these ladies know how to rock.
Yeah, some might say they rock.
And this was like the first single from their highest charting album.
Right.
I also think, too... Yeah, it's like lesbian culture just has not broken through into the mainstream in the like there's still something where like women don't necessarily want to be seen as lesbians or like blah 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 that can still be seen as more of an insult.
It's frustrating.
Yeah.
Emily, what song do you want?
So this song is I want you to play the song Elizabeth.
Okay.
It's from their album One Lost Day, and I was trying to figure out what song this reminded me of, and it led me to an article.
Three streets off the grid, we were barely kids.
I mean, they get right into it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they really do.
This song is extremely evocative of the song Rocky Raccoon. It has some similar...
Oh, yeah. Yes, sure. Yes. King must die on the willows,
drank the wine that we could afford. Yeah, I hear it on some of the runs.
Yep.
We were young, but not that young, to be cutting our fingers and mixing our blood. Climbing the fence of the St. Louis Cemetery.
This is a nice song, and I like it.
Mm-hmm.
Also, it's just funny. It's interesting because I'm very rarely in the mood to listen to this type of music.
Really?
I'm very rarely in like an Indigo Girls mood. I think if I had grown up in California, I would be different. I think it would be different.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I will say part of the reason why I think I've been like diving back in super hard is that I have so much more time in my car. And one of my hobbies is to sing in the car and to also harmonize with what I'm listening to.
Yeah.
And they're perfect harmony music. They have such good harmonies. They're also both basically in my range, which is unusual for mm-hmm. female vocalists, because I'm an alto. But yeah, and so I think a lot of their songs are good for that. And
they
they're
fun sing along songs.
They
too,
are
with big groups too, where everybody's doing a little harmony.
Yeah.
And Empire songs.
I want to give credit to Eliza Skinner for illuminating some thematics of their music that have become more meaningful to me as my career has gone on, which is that a lot of their songs are about the loneliness of being a touring musician, because that's like how they've spent the bulk
that's
of their lives.
Lives.
And it's like a theme that I didn't pick up on as much when I was younger listening to their music, but now as an adult I can. And Eliza and I hope she doesn't mind that I talk about this. We were having a conversation about like what the particular loneliness of being a comedian who people think that they know and who they like, mm-hmm. but to who maybe have a hard time with like maintaining intimate relationships with people. And which is, I think, something a lot of comedians struggle with. And there's
not Joe.
Of course not.
There's a song called Language or the Kiss, which if you're going to listen to the 12 o'clock curfews version, which is the live one. It's better than the studio one. And there's a line in that song that goes, "Oh, the fear I've known that I might reap the praise of strangers and end up on my own."
Ooh,
and you're like,
ooh,
oh, that's like cuts yeah. to
that's too close. That is
right.
Too
it's close to the bone. And
yikes. Ouch. Oh.
It's a song about basically like looking in at a like from the outside of a house at like a dinner party and being mm-hmm. like, this is the life that I'm missing by being on the road, pretty much. And I think that there's like there's a depth to their songs and the lyricism of their songs, and it can be like seen as very earnest. And I think we're at a time right now where people are returning to earnest music because mm-hmm. of how bleak the world is. Like mm-hmm. we're a little bit over irony, we're a little bit over like that kind of distance.
We need true hope.
And
we
so
need,
if there's gonna be a time that you're gonna listen to the Indigo Girls, get into it now.
Get into them now, guys. You heard it. What was the name of that song?
That song is called Language or the Kiss.
Language or the Kiss.
Live
also,
version.
That...
Live version, 12 o'clock curfews.
Yeah, that title. Oof, also.
Yeah.
Pretty good.
Good.
Joe, what's our next category?
Commercial success. You know, they had three albums
in societally
went...
adjusted terms.
They had three albums that went gold and then three albums that went platinum. And one of those went twice platinum. Which is incredible, especially for this type of music that didn't get a ton of radio play.
Yeah,
is impressive, and it's obviously not like they were one of the highest selling groups of all time, but you can't say that people weren't buying their records.
Yeah, you can't say that they haven't had a cultural impact.
Mm-mm. Yeah,
longevity, I'd say
they're still around. They just put out an album, right?
True,
I think so. Yeah,
but if we're evaluating the kind of like peak years of their like. When they mattered and like when they were kind of at the top of their game, we're looking at maybe a 10 or so year stretch from the late 80s to
the
end
90s.
Of the 90s.
I also think they
like
did
the definitive
that thing
era
where it was like they were popular in one sense, and then when the Lilith Fair resurgence happened, they got like a resurgence up. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I think Lilith Fair might have been their peak popularity. Yeah. And it was like, it was a culmination of their previous, of people's interest in them previously.
Mm-hmm.
Now it felt like they could connect this band that they liked to a cultural movement in a way that they couldn't before. Before they were sort of like an isolated artist, and now they were part of a collection of artists making a specific statement about women in music.
Yeah.
Oh man.
And they
I'm getting like wistful. It's very weird because I wasn't like super. I was not a super Lilith Fair type person. I was too busy trying to be cool, one of the guys.
Mm-hmm.
And I just think about how like important and impactful. I talk about this all the time about how like important representation is, and for especially in music, and for women to feel like they can be musicians and that they can, that their voice matters, and that it's just, it's so important. And I didn't even think at the time about how important it was that like that whole thing happened. You know, I was in high school probably when that happened, and it was like, it's a big deal that it was cool to be a female artist. And yes, there were many jokes made, and yes, it was like still not, it was still like barely
and I do
starting
think
to be okay.
The
to
jokes
be gay.
Undermine the social impact of Lilith Fair, which was specifically set out to not just remind people that women were in music, but that women were like creative forces behind music, and that they were like skilled musicians. Mm-hmm. I think that was a big part of it. It wasn't just that they were
I think it got written off in like this like goddess culture way. And it's like unfortunate because, but it was important and and groundbreaking. And even if it did have like, even if it did get, you know, some sort
lumped
of backlash
in,
or lumped in or whatever, it still was important. Mm-hmm. And I hadn't thought about it in a while.
Yeah.
It is important. That was what? 20 years ago.
Yeah.
20 years ago. Mm-hmm. People, that's crazy. That's cool.
And that ties into the last category, which is influence and innovation. And I think the Indigo Girls, even, I mean, it's kind of, we've hinted at it, but it feels like they paved the way for Lilith Fair to even exist. Because of what they were doing at that time, years before Lilith Fair started. And I think, I want to say nearly every artist who was in Lilith Fair owes something to what the Indigo Girls were doing.
Absolutely. Oh, with the possible exception of Erykah Badu, who is
she's doing
own,
it on herself.
Who I saw at Lilith Fair also. But anyway, but I do think that like probably a big part of the success of Lilith Fair was the fact that like they, I think they have been a consistent road draw pretty much wherever, whenever they've toured.
Mm-hmm.
And part of that I think has to do with the shutout of lesbian culture from other forms of media,
like the
that
niche-ness,
like
nicheness, it was like there's no what like there's nobody else. You got to go see the damn Indigo Girl. You know what I mean?
Right. Like, and also, it's like, what cultural spaces can you enter that are specifically like for women who love women? Other than, and I will say, like, I was surprised at the last Indigo Girl show that I saw in L.A. Just sort of like my, based on my visual scan of the people who were like holding hands at the show, there were, I think, as many gay men as lesbians there, which I thought was really interesting because you don't tend to associate them with being.
Yes. Although, you know, it's because I do think that like we've begun to look at, especially at gay male culture, as monolithic. And, you know, there are obviously, I know many quiet gays. I know, you know, I know many, you know, introverted, contemplative, you know, gay people.
And also, I'm straight. So I feel like that's worth mentioning here is that, like, I've been talking about this a lot as, like, a big part of lesbian culture. I'm not gay, but, like, I've rarely had.
You're a feminist, so to everybody.
Well, yeah, but I also, I'm, like, pretty much, like, my whole life, my female friends have been queer, whether I knew it or not.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know how I ended up in that situation where, like, I don't know if there's something about me that codes queer, or if I just, like, have a internalized misogyny towards straight women. It's probably a combination of both. But I do feel like the Indigo Girls are a big part of why I've, like, tried to demonstrate an appropriate appreciation for like you know, queer female culture to the extent that I have throughout my life and the friendships that I've cultivated there. But and I'm still like not great at always like I'm pretty heteronormative in ways that I don't realize at the time. But like I never assume that women are queer, even though most of the people I'm friends with have ended up being in some way. But anyway,
We're all trying.
Yeah, but my point is just that like they've got crossover appeal.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah, this isn't just you coming from a specific culture.
Because, no, yeah. I didn't start listening to the Indigo Girls because I'm a lesbian. I started listening to them because my dad started listening to them. Mm-hmm. And my dad like has made a point to say, like, I want credit for introducing this family to the Indigo Girls.
That's great.
Yeah.
Last category. Does my
also,
mom...
Also, your dad's a lesbian.
Oh, right, yeah.
Does my mom know who they are?
Does your mom know who the Indigo Girls are?
She does.
Does your mom like the Indigo Girls?
I don't know. Not
if you played them for her, she might.
Yeah, that's the thing. Is like she listens to the kind of public radio that I'm sure plays.
She's probably heard them on interstitials and doesn't realize it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I've got to imagine she would recognize Closer to Fine and then some of those songs. I don't think she owns an album, but I think she would go, oh, the Indigo Girls. Yeah, they're nice.
Yeah,
my mom definitely knows the Indigo Girls. Again, part of the XRT. There's like this station in Chicago that plays like adult alternative rock. Mm-hmm. It's been around for a long time, and that's my mom's favorite station, and the Indigo Girls get played. And my mom, I mean, I don't think that this is like, this might be stereotyping, but you know, she also owns several Melissa Etheridge albums, so I think my mom, you know, she's down with like you know, gay women who rock.
Yeah.
Ooh, it's Melissa Etheridge. She's not in the Rock Hall, is she? Oh,
come on.
I'm just trying. She rocks, though.
I know, but
she
you knew the answer before you asked.
I know,
asked.
But she does rock.
I don't know a ton about Melissa Etheridge, but it is interesting that she is more of a touchstone for lesbian music than the Indigo Girls, because I do think they're more prolific than she is.
Yes,
am I wrong?
Well, and it might also be that her, she's had more commercial success.
Crossover, yeah.
She's had a lot of commercial success because I think, I think it's also because folk music getting, or like kind of that kind of like acoustic music not getting a lot of love in general on the radio. And I think because Melissa is electric.
That might be.
Yeah,
I think so.
More,
yeah, that would be my guess too. It comes down to the production.
But man,
yeah.
I'm the Only One. Ooh,
that's good.
A good song.
Yeah.
It's like karaoke jam too. People, I've heard people destroy it. And I have also destroyed it the other
in a
way.
Different way.
I like thought I could do it, but you forget she holds a note at the long time at the end. Whoops, mistakes. All right,
verdict time.
Okay.
So we are going to say, should they be inducted in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame? Will they, and if so, when?
All right, this episode has convinced me that they should. Prior to this, I wouldn't have stood up for the Indigo Girls. Like, if someone wanted to shit on the Indigo Girls, I probably would have let it slide.
Yeah.
I probably would have been like, yeah, they suck. Who cares?
And I do think there are a lot of lesbians who shit on the Indigo Girls because they resent the joke of the Indigo Girls being made about them.
And also there is, again, it's like a self-hating thing, too, where it's like, yeah, well, I'm not one of those lesbians. I'm not an Indigo Girl lesbian.
Yeah.
I'm
a Janelle Monáe lesbian.
I'm a Janelle Monáe lesbian, for example. Although, legitimately, I would rather be a Janelle Monáe lesbian.
You don't have to choose.
Exactly. You don't have to choose. But prior to this episode, I'm telling you, I would have let it slide. I would have been like, yeah, whatever. Who cares? You can shit on them. I'm not bothered. And now I think I would be like, excuse me. Have you thought about how we don't make room for lesbian culture in mainstream society? And that's interesting to me. And I do. I think they're good. I think they're prolific, and I think they're interesting, and I think they should. Do I think they will? This is where the old little Hardy break. I mean, we can't get Whitney Houston in. We can't get some other people in, and I don't know that it will happen for them. It would take such a seismic shift in the makeup of the nom-com and of our society to make it happen. I'm not saying that it absolutely will not. I mean, anything can happen. We have I just feel like these last 2 years have really proved that in a terrible way. So, you know, I don't think they will. But if they did, I'd say we're looking at 20 years from now when maybe we've opened our hearts and minds as a society.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
That's my verdict.
That's your verdict, Emily.
So obviously I think they deserve to be inducted in the Hall of Fame, for reasons which I have elucidated over the last hour. Will they? This seems like impossible to predict. If things continue as they have been, absolutely not. Will they? They will not be inducted. But I could also see there being like a cultural moment that they, I mean, like, think about in the last
Hashtag
year.
She too.
Like, I mean, in the last year.
Joe did the worst thing.
By the way, we should probably put a spoiler alert on our discussion of Tig's special because their appearance in Tig's special starts as a joke and becomes very real. Tig used to do this bit on stage where she would say, "Ladies and gentlemen, the Integral Girls," and continuously introduce them, and they would never come out. And that was the joke. And it never actually happened when she was touring. And then when she filmed her special, she actually had them do a cameo. And that's like a cultural moment that I'm sure they were not expecting to have last year, you know, and all of a sudden it's happening. And so
that was why they were on my mind, because I had seen that special.
Right,
I was like, oh, the Indigo Girls, like from Tig's special.
Yeah. And so I think that there's a chance that, like, let's say one of their old songs gets used in something giant, or like one of them dies, or there is a documentary.
Yeah, or like they're in the Leslie Gore documentary. to get a Leslie Gore documentary. She was also gay. Did you know that Leslie Gore was gay?
I don't know who Leslie Gore is.
She's saying it's my party. Sunshine Lollipops and You Don't Own Me.
Oh shit.
Yeah.
Anyway, so it would take something big happening, which I'm not ruling out, but I think I wouldn't bet on it.
Yeah.
Joe. The expert opinion.
Yeah, you know, I think I've been convinced in the category of should.
Hell yeah!
Did this episode do it for you?
Yeah, because
were you like me, but I was much closer to the line than you were. You were probably further from the line.
Yeah, closer to line.
I also would not be surprised if this decision was being made with me out of the room if it went the other way. Like I know I have an intense energy around this.
Well, I'm telling you, you genuinely convinced me. I said it. I'm quite malleable in things like this, in things that like are ephemeral and don't matter. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, you couldn't convince me to vote Republican, but like you could convince me that the Indigo Girls probably deserve to be in the Rock Hall.
Mostly coming into it thinking that I only really knew one of their songs. That made me think, well, if you most people can't name a bunch of songs, that seems like not a good sign in terms of if they should be in the Hall of Fame. But
how many Dick Dale songs can you name, Joe? And you said he should be in.
Right. But he is not in.
Yeah, I know. I'm just saying.
Right. But what has been brought up, especially about being important figures in a certain culture, and how I have to imagine, especially as the years go on, I do feel like their importance will grow.
Yeah.
And it will be more visible, which makes me think that there's a case to be made. Will they? I think probably not.
Yeah.
But they were at the induction ceremony.
They are adjacent. They circled.
Yeah. Someone thought of them.
I mean, there's a reason why they were at the Joan Baez induction, which is that like they've the specific torch that they've taken up, which, you know, is protest music. Like a lot of their music is not protest music, but they are so political in so much of their music. I mean, Shame on You is like
Shame on You is like an immigration song. Yeah.
Yeah. It's like a song about Chicano immigration, basically. And they are like very strategic. Like one of their big covers is "Bury My Heart at Wounded Knee." They play at a lot of like political, like
and
fundraiser
they have
concerts
for a long time. Right. They've been political.
They've been political from the jump. I feel like, and now I feel like we're in this age of intense political action, and I think that they're more relevant now than they were maybe 2 years ago.
And they played the song "Deportee."
Oh yeah,
they played it with Joan Baez when they
that's really cool.
Which is
that is cool.
Song.
They're cool. I really.
So I mean, like some. I mean, maybe it was Joan who said like I want to play with them. But you know, when that induction ceremony was coming together, they were thought of. They were part of the conversation. So you know, it's not out of the question. If it happens, though, it's like yeah, at least 20 years. I feel.
Yeah.
Especially considering the backlog of artists that are not
and
in
the backlash, just against like women in general.
I would. If I had to. Yeah. I don't know that it'll happen if it did.
It feels like the bench of deserving women is maybe deeper than the bench of deserving men. It's going to take longer to clear.
There are huge benches
all
over the place.
Well, especially considering that there's only one spot every year for a woman to even get inducted, maybe.
Yeah, I mean, just the way it goes, it's like if you...
Yeah, there should be... They need to Ruth Bader Ginsburg it. There needs to be just all women classes until they catch up. Until there's parity. I am not kidding.
Mm-hmm.
Until they catch up, until there's at least like, and it doesn't, I'm not saying it needs to be 50-50, but I'd be down with that. But like even just parity in like the number of releases by women versus, you know what I'm saying? Like,
I feel like the likeliest scenario that would result in their induction would be like, there is a giant PR disaster and for the Rock Hall of Fame and they are like
someone puts
working
their
on
dick
their...
in the hoagie at the meeting
and they
it
are
comes out
they're working on their optics. I feel like Indigo Girls are an optical choice.
Mm-hmm. Ooh, you make an excellent point.
That's really
thank
good.
You
it would be fun if it happened.
Yes.
I would try and go.
Oh yeah,
yeah.
I tried to go to Tick Special. I couldn't make it work.
It?
Yeah.
Aww. I was. You could have gotten in.
I was busy.
Oh, it's like it's probably just.
But I was like, they're gonna be there. Oh my god.
The induction ceremonies. If you are a fan of a band or artist getting inducted, that it's like a fucking dream. Like
you get to
watch a fun little documentary. Someone. And we're going to get to this in a second. Yeah. Someone inducts them. Someone famous inducts
and
them.
And gives like a heartfelt speech about how great they are.
And then they come up and say thank you. And they're always very moved. And then they play
this
their three best
Joe
songs.
This is why Joe likes the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame.
Yeah.
This is where I start to come over. Where I'm like, that is nice.
Because it's a ceremony of Lifetime Achievement Awards. Of only Lifetime Achievement Awards. All right. Let's say the Indigo.
See, again, it doesn't make you hate it. It makes you like it a little more.
Let's say the Indigo Girls are getting inducted. Who inducts them? Who gives the speech?
Inducting the Indigo Girls.
This is
a great question.
Yeah.
I mean, if it were happening now, Joan Baez would make a lot of sense.
I don't know if it would go the other way, though. Wouldn't it be?
Sometimes it does. Sometimes,
is it usually someone like older or younger?
It's all over the board.
Because I think if it was.
Sometimes it's somebody like super contemporary. They're like making a pull. They're like making a grab for like the youth, but like what they think of as the youth.
I would guess, honestly, if it happened today, that it would be Sheryl Crow.
Okay.
Who else have we thought that Sheryl Crow should induct? We talked about this before.
Taylor. Well, we were talking about if Taylor Swift wanted to make, as she was becoming eligible, if she wanted to make a play and like make nice with the hall, if she inducted Sheryl Crow.
Oh. Right.
That makes sense to me.
And you think Sheryl Crow would get in, right?
I think Sheryl Crow's going to get in.
I mean, I hope she gets
in.
I like Sheryl Crow.
You know when she becomes eligible?
When?
She becomes eligible.
FYAE, I will be so excited.
She
can be on the I didn't even think that I cared that much about Sheryl Crow, but like My Favorite Mistake is such a great song. She's got a lot of good songs.
She could be
I
on
like
that ballot.
Sheryl Crow.
It could happen.
Oh my God, Strong Enough? Oh, Sheryl. I hope she gets nominated. Ooh, that would be so exciting. It won't fucking happen.
Wow.
Okay.
Who knows?
Because I have no faith in the Academy.
Jesus.
I've lost a lot of faith this year.
You know who could induct the Indigo Girls? Tig.
Oh, yes.
Oh, yeah. Do they have
like
comedians?
Yeah, like Howard Stern inducted Bon Jovi.
Oh.
Letterman inducted
Pearl Jam.
Tig would be a great choice.
Yeah.
Tig is a great choice.
I think Sarah McLachlan.
I was thinking
also
about that, too.
Also a
yeah.
great choice. I was like Tegan and Sarah, but I think they're too fringe.
Maybe. Who knows?
I think Tegan and Sarah are like a different enough genre. I think they'd have a lot to say about the Indigo Girls, but I don't think it's as natural of a choice.
Well, like, you know, for example, like Ann Wilson from Heart inducted
the Moody Blues.
But and like she just talked about like their influence on her. Like like how important they were to her and like what their music meant to her growing up. So like,
right.
Do we know anyone? Is there anyone who has public? I mean, Tig is a great choice.
Mm-hmm.
She's a great choice.
Yeah,
that's a really good one. Sheryl Crow is a good choice too.
Tig, the whole Tig thing is so interesting to me too, because like Tig for so long resisted sort of like being thought of as a lesbian comedian,
mm-hmm.
regardless of like how much control she actually had over that. And like the Indigo Girls themselves too, like never gendered the subjects of their songs for so long because of homophobia.
Yeah.
And I think it's interesting that in Tig's most recent special, which is so much more personal than mm-hmm. the stuff that she, I mean, like obviously Liv was really personal, but like up before Liv, which was about her health, like she hadn't really address her sexuality like, as head on.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And then like she closed her most recent yeah. special with like the most lesbian
like,
ending
thing
you could
about
possibly
me,
have.
My wife, yeah. our children, and here's the Indigo Girls.
What's the connection between the Indigo Girls and Pink? Because it's on Wikipedia, it says associated act.
Pink.
And
that's a great question.
Brandi Carlile is listed,
oh,
which
Brandi
would be
Carlile.
A good
she is
inductor.
Also gay, yes.
I believe so. Yes.
Yes.
She is. And then Pink for some reason is listed
that song,
on here
the
as
joke
well.
Of hers is so good. I like Brandi Carlile.
Michael Stipe, I mean you should probably have a woman induct the Indigo Girls, but yeah. Michael Stipe is not a bad choice.
Michael Stipe's not a bad choice because he's also a Georgian musician mm-hmm. and also gay.
Yeah.
So that makes sense to me. Someone else from Georgia makes sense.
And he's a hall favorite, you know. He inducted
yeah.
Nirvana. Pink did a song called Dear Mr. President
oh.
with the Indigo Girls.
Yeah.
A protest song, a political song. What do you know?
2006.
All right.
Guess which president they were addressing.
Me no know. All right, so Indigo Girls are getting inducted. What three songs do they play?
Usually Closer to Fine. Galileo.
Closer to Fine, Galileo.
Shame on you.
Yeah, that makes sense. They have to do at least one Emily, at least one Amy song. Mm-hmm. And it seems like they would do, if they were going to do an Amy song, it would probably be either Shame on You or Joking.
And I think they would open with Galileo, then do Shame on You, close it out with Closer to Fine. Everybody in the audience is joined hands. Their hands are in the air. Everybody's swaying. It's very beautiful. Then they bring out all of the other performers who are there, and everybody does their own harmony. And it's very beautiful. And cool.
15-point harmony.
I'm not kidding, and I'm definitely here for it. I think it sounds great.
Last time I saw them, they had a really great opener. But what they very often do on tour is they bring out their opening band to during the encore to like join in on Closer to Fine,
mm-hmm.
and their opening act had to have the lyrics written down on a piece of paper in her hand when they did it, and I judged her very harshly for it.
Ooh,
as you should.
Yeah,
come on.
Oh,
you're
girl.
On tour with
also
them.
You're on tour with them,
you're
like just sit
them.
On the bus and learn it.
Right?
Just learn it.
It's not like they're surprising you
really,
with it.
Yeah.
She was really young. Like, she's a really young musician. I think it was, like, one of her first big tours. But it was still one of those things where I wanted to be, like, I wanted to shake her. I was so mad.
Don't you realize?
Know your history.
She was so good, though. But,
yeah.
Well, then. Okay. I'm okay with it.
Give
then.
Her a pass.
Yeah.
If she was good and she's young.
Hey,
okay.
All right.
All right.
Emily, thank you so much for,
oh
for
my
doing
gosh.
The show.
Thank you for having me.
Is there anything you would like to plug, your social media or any projects?
I want
to
plug every Indigo Girls album. obviously, I've thrown a lot of love on 12 O'Clock Curfews, but self-titled, Rites of Passage, Nomads, Indian Saints, they're all good. Shame on You felt like their first sort of like public, or Shaming of the Sun felt like their first sort of like kind of more mainstream album, and that one feels a little post-peak to me, but it's still good. Also, their later stuff have some great jams.
We thought she was kidding.
I
she really does want to take this time.
I
to,
really, I'm con-
to plug
I'm
the
consider
Indigo Girls
I'm
album.
Considering sending you guys public links to my Spotify playlist mm-hmm. of Essential and Sick Indigo
oh, yeah,
Girls
we'll
tracks.
Them up. Yes.
I want to like just like preface it by saying that like my sick Indigo Girls tracks, it started as just like songs that they were playing on tour that I wasn't familiar with. So that I put them on the playlist to get familiar with. And there is one song on there that I do not stand by as a choice, but it's kind of a funny choice because it kind of sounds like it's a ska song and they should not do that. I don't think that song is good, but I've listened to it enough that I don't think it's bad. But I don't want you to think that I think that that's like a really, really good Indigo Girls song. So I'm just going to send you the links to that. And when does this come out?
Next Friday.
Yeah.
Yeah, at I'm sure they are on, like, yeah. They're on tour.
Great. What's your Twitter?
I'm at Mr. Emily Heller on everything.
Great. That's M-R.
M-R. Emily Heller.
H-E, double hockey sticks.
Yeah. Yes, thank you.
Are you still doing your podcast, Baby Geniuses?
I am still doing my podcast, Baby Geniuses, although we no longer have guests on, which is why I haven't asked you to do it.
That's all right. Those were always the longer parts. I would sometimes be a guest. Joe, have you been a guest on Baby Geniuses?
I can't say that I was.
You never will be. I mean, we might have guests on again, but Kristen was one of our absolute favorite regulars.
What a joy. What a treat.
Yeah.
How fun.
So I check out my podcast. I've got an album coming out in November. You can watch Barry on HBO.
Yeah.
Hell yeah.
Yeah.
Guys, you know me. It's your girl. It's your girl, K Stud. That's me on all social media at K Stud. Hey, check out my newly revamped website, hellokristen.com, and it has all of my dates on it, and I'm gonna keep it updated. You have my word for this week. Thank you.
And the guarantee is that website will have no mention of this podcast ever.
Nope.
Not one word.
No way. Not look at. Should I write that in my bio? Should I add it to my ending paragraph?
Just
she also co-hosts.
She also will not tell you about her
podcast. She begrudgingly
co-hosts
a podcast that she would rather not mention here.
Yeah. I'm at JoeKJoeK on Twitter. And
At JoeQua
on Instagram. Please rate and review us on the iTunes. Subscribe. Five
Pretty
stars
please.
Only.
We'd love some more reviews.
We'd love
only compliments only. Five stars only, guys. Listen up.
We
if
you've
got
this.
Grudges, you can send us an email at
rockhallpod@gmail.com. We
all
love
right?
your messages.
That's where
They're
your
very sweet.
Grudges and your complaints and your corrections can go to. Also, compliments welcomed. Mm-hmm. But honestly, if you want to send us a compliment, tell it to the public.
Yeah.
Put it in a review.
Tag us. We'll retweet it. We should probably shout out future rock legends because the information that we use on this podcast is
And also
curated
most of it
by
comes
them.
From Joe's brain, though.
Yeah. Ted Tremper, Liz Fole, and Natalie Garcia-Mayor for opening their home to us.
And Bets the Dog.
And for the equipment and all this. Thank you so much. My name is Joe Quazala.
I'm Kristen Sutter.
And who cares?
About the Rock Hall. Bye.
It's NFL draft season, and that means it's time to start thinking about fantasy football. FantasyPoints.com features industry-leading experts and prognosticators using proprietary hand-charted data to help you score more fantasy points. FantasyPoints.com is the place to go for whatever kind of fantasy football you play. Whether you play fantasy football, daily fantasy sports, or do a little bit of everything, Fantasy Points has the meticulously researched content to guide you to victory. And why wait for the fall? Fantasy Points also covers the new spring football league, the UFL. Join the guru, John Hansen, Scott Barrett, Joe Dolan, and other massive names in the fantasy football universe with an exclusive offer. Use code Pantheon for 15% off any Fantasy Points package, including the all-in package, with access to every article, tool, and data nugget that Fantasy Points has to offer. That's FantasyPoints.com and code Pantheon for 15% off at Fantasy Points. FantasyPoints.com, code Pantheon. Score more fantasy points.